Yeah, I wanted to, before we get into all this other stuff, I wanted to start by just castigating you. As you know, in real time, I was saying, what was it, on Saturday?
Yeah.
You were live betting, and you live bet on North Carolina.
Sure did.
Beat Michigan State, and at the time, Michigan State was up by 12 or 10, something in that range. And then you let me know that you had live bet on North Carolina. And I want you to explain yourself. You hate North Carolina,
yeah,
and you're live betting on them to win.
Yeah. I will say, this is the first time I've been castigated for taking free money from someone. That's my only, like, to me, that's the only explanation I need. It felt like a very obvious bet. It was a $3 bet. It's not like it changed my rooting interests.
Okay,
it was
so
$3. If I had put my life savings on it, then it'd be like, okay, because now I have to like really pull for Carolina. Here's the way I look at it. One, it was free money. Two, it created a win-win situation for me. Carolina loses to Michigan State, and I'm happy because Carolina lost. Carolina beats Michigan State, like I was pretty positive they did, and look, they did it. And I win like $7. Like, it, you know, it's not, to me, I don't know. This is not, it feels like a non-issue. I made some money off of some evil people. It's certainly not the first time someone's done that. Okay. Nor will it be the last.
Hold on. Let me check two things there. Okay. Number one, you say that it's a win-win and that it didn't change your rooting interest. So you were still rooting for Michigan State to upset
North
Carolina.
Absolutely. That was way more important to me than the $7 I would win.
Right. So wouldn't it just be easier to continue rooting for the team that you're rooting for rather than have this emotional hedge of like, oh, yeah, but it's kind of still good if North Carolina wins? Like, that just seems...
I don't see it as an emotional hedge. I see it as like, if the thing I don't want to happen happens, at least there's a silver lining. It doesn't change my emotions towards the game. It doesn't change what I want to happen ultimately. It's like, if this terrible thing happens, at least I will profit. Like, how is this different than, like, Northrop Grumman or something? You know, like.
Well, okay. But here's
I'm
what I would
say. I'm the Halliburton of sports betting.
I'm going to defend Halliburton, I guess, in this situation. At least with them, they're making millions upon millions of dollars. So, like, if I bet something that I thought was going to happen, I want to root for it. I want to full-on root for that thing,
yeah.
And I'm not going to place bets that force me to not root for it, and I'm not going to place bets that are only $3 if I think that something's going to happen.
So like, I knew,
for me, it would have been better had you bet your house on it, because then you would have been like, I have this conviction that this is going to happen and I want it to happen. Instead, you're like,
right. And then I'm pulling for Carolina versus just giving myself a little bit of something to feel if they win instead of just like, oh, here it goes again. I'll do it again, too. Like this, I don't know.
I don't know. I kind of feel like
you're trying to frame it as like,
fan.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Fan.
You want to frame me as a bad fan. But
I think like a little bit.
The reality is I've made a much bigger bet on my team to win the national championship.
Okay.
Which is like stupid, but it will change my life if they win. And it was bet with only winnings that came from betting things like Carolina to win. So does that change the calculus on this? That I will take the money, essentially, because I placed the bet right after.
We're getting into Immanuel Kant here.
I'll take the money from betting on Carolina and use it to potentially profit if NC State wins the title.
Do the ends justify the means? Yeah.
In this case, absolutely, really, because I'll have money.
All right.
And I think we're trying to put this like morality on sports gambling, which
no,
there's some stuff there, but
there's some stuff in the news about sports betting. I don't know if you noticed that, but
I just feel like it really does come down to I was at work, first of all. I don't know if I can say that, but
well, I don't know. Do you work at an NCAA compliance office?
No, I just feel like
otherwise you're in trouble.
I feel like I was, you know, on the clock. Maybe I shouldn't be spending my time gambling, but it's really fine. What are they going to do? Fire me? So I was at work. The game was on. I looked up. I was like, oh, Michigan. Actually, my coworker was like, Michigan State is up on Carolina. Like, are they going to beat them? And I laughed and I looked at it and I was like, there's no way. In fact, let me just go ahead and profit off of this. And then, yeah, like I still wasn't happy with it in terms of like I wanted Carolina to lose. But it's just like if you know something's inevitable, why not? Like I'm sorry that I don't have a ton of money to have bet more on this.
I'm just saying.
Seems like an elitist take. It would be okay if I had gambled more.
I'm saying that when I'm gambling, I want something to happen. And if I'm picking a game, not only that I want something to happen, that I think it's going to happen. So both of those criteria. And it's very easy for me to not pick Carolina because I want to root against North Carolina. I can pick any other game.
I try not to gamble with my heart. I don't bet on what I want to happen. I bet on what I think is going to happen.
Okay.
Outside of my bet on NC State to win the national title. But like that is like objectively one of the dumbest bets I've ever placed. So
still pretty good odds. Things, they're like ranked at the very bottom.
Things
of
that, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like it was just appealing. And, you know, I try not to get too caught up in what the heart wants and doesn't want when it comes to matters of sports betting. I want to bet based on, you know, most likely outcomes. So
no,
like,
I do want to also, but I'm just saying, like, I'm not going to bet on Virginia Tech for things. I'm not going to bet on Maryland for things, even if I'm certain they're going to win.
That's
I'm not going to do
fine.
It.
That's fine. That's your approach. I don't think it makes you any better of a fan. It's just, like, if you had plus odds in a game that one of those teams was favored by double digits going in,
I would avoid doing it because I want to root against them. That's all I'm saying.
But
like,
you
I
can
just think
still
it's emotional...
root against them.
Right, but I don't know. I don't bet to root. I don't ever root against my bets, ever. Ever. Why would I root against my bets? I don't care.
Because it was such Betting's a small amount money. Of money that it didn't ultimately matter. But it gave me something that if the thing I didn't want to happen happened, I still would have. I could look at it and be like, "Oh, great, Carolina won." But hey, at least I got myself a little bit more in my. I'm not gonna advertise for free for the sports book I use, but in that account, and you know, I see no issue with it. I mean, like, it didn't even make me feel like I didn't love the feeling of doing it.
Ah, see, now we're in. Now there it is. That's what I'm pushing in.
But it didn't make me feel like less of a fan or feel worse because I was making a financial decision. I was not making a fan decision. Those two things are incredibly separate for me. Like what I want as a fan, and this is crazy because you'll tell me that all the time. You it just seems like you will tell me not to bet like on my team and stuff like that, but then I should be thinking about what I want to happen and be betting with my heart, like you're saying.
No, I'm not. Again, it has to meet both criteria. It has to be something you think is going to happen and that you want to happen or that you're neutral on.
I think you're really limiting yourself. I think,
okay.
Like,
I'm fine.
I'm going to bet on things if I just think they are going to happen. I don't have to like it. There's plenty of things out there that are terrible that I would love to bet on happening because I know they're going to happen.
I really don't even want to get into what you're thinking
about
in the world.
But I just know, like, hey, this is going to happen. So it's a way to, it's free money. It's free money. And I'm not in a position in my life to turn that down.
Okay.
Go Pack.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Preferred Walk-Ons podcast. This is Michael McGraw here with Michael Schutt. We have made it through the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. We also made it through the first four. We don't need to talk about that. And first two rounds of the tournament, great for the Atlantic Coast Conference. 8-0 for teams in the first two rounds. We've got four of the 16 teams that are in the Sweet 16. Pretty cool for our conference.
It's the 13th time the ACC has done that. 13th time the ACC has had a quarter of the Sweet 16. No other conference has done it more than five times.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool for a conference that a lot of people didn't think deserved too much attention. I mean, you could say what you want about Virginia. They played a really bad game in the first four, and so maybe they didn't deserve to get into the tournament. Arguable. But Clemson showed up. North Carolina showed up. Duke has played really, really well. They played some championship basketball through the first two rounds. And NC State got it done. Dramatic fashion against Oakland. That was a really fun game to watch, which I want to talk about a little bit at the Spectrum
fun
Center.
Fun may not be the word.
I mean, I had fun watching it. You may have died inside. But I usually don't make too much of the conference records in the NCAA tournament because so much of it is like random. It's a small sample size, and you don't have any control over the teams that are being played against. So, like, if NC State had gotten paired against Houston in the very first game of the tournament for some reason, maybe the ACC is still not undefeated. But at the same time, I do feel like all year there was this narrative that the ACC was down. The ACC shouldn't get that many teams in. Only North Carolina and Duke were locks. And here we are performing pretty well as a conference in the tournament.
I've been extremely vocal about it through the season. I mean, in January, right, pundits were calling this a two-bid league. And even into February, right, it was always absurd to me. It continues to be absurd. It is hard when you're thinking about how to justify selections and things like that. And I don't want to ignore completely we don't have to get into it, but I don't want to ignore the Virginia result because I think it is important for a couple of things. But the thing that I find most important about that is it is one game. And you want to talk about small sample size. Colorado State goes out the very next round and scores 11 points in the first half. So if you play that game 10 times, who's to say that that's how it happens a majority of the time or even a second time? Maybe that is a fluke. I'm not saying that it is, but the fact that it possibly could be. You can't use one game, but I think when your conference ends up making a quarter of the 16 teams left in the tournament, it says something. And I know there's some variance, and I know there's things where, like, look, I look at NC State's draw, and if Oakland had not upset Kentucky, do I love our chances against Kentucky in round two? Probably not. I even look at the Sweet 16 draw, and, like, I find Marquette to be more beatable than Colorado. So I think after that, it gets a lot harder. But there's a lot of things that can happen. There's a lot of things that can break in the favor of some of these teams. But as the sample size gets bigger, the evidence of the ACC's really even dominance when it comes to March just gets more convincing. Like I said, 13th time the ACC has had four teams in the Sweet 16. All the other conferences have combined for 19 such occurrences. The ACC for 45 straight years has had at least one team in the Sweet 16. 45 straight years. The Big 12 has the second longest streak, which is still active at 25. There is not a conference in this land that has success in the NCAA tournament like the ACC. So we can say small sample size when you look at one tournament. We can say, look at one game like Virginia, and people will use that to say, like, see, the ACC sucks. But time and time again over the years, when it comes down to this time of year, this conference performs. And I think that matters for something.
Yeah, I think it should, too. Unfortunately, this has been tied to some of the Greg Sankey comments about expanding the tournament, and Tom Izzo had some comments about expanding the tournament. And really, when they talk about expansion, they're not talking about expansion to get small mid-major teams a spot. They're basically arguing that the teams like Oakland are the problem that are keeping out teams on the bubble like St. John's or Seton Hall or something like that. And you know, I think people were ready to jump on that after the Virginia game. We can talk about the Virginia game if we want. I mean, I think obviously just a really bad offensive performance, which then everybody spun up about how this is a huge problem for Tony Bennett. And I think as a Virginia fan, honestly, I think both things can be true at once. It can be true that Virginia's had really struggled on offense all year. It was beyond one game. But at the same time, a lot of teams in this tournament struggled offensively. I mean, there were eight teams that had halves in the tournament, including Virginia, that were sub 20 points. Colorado State had 11 at a game that I was at against Texas. And there didn't seem to be the kind of outrage that, like, I know a lot of UVA fans kind of got out over their skis on Twitter about this, including me. But, like, there are a lot of teams that just don't have offensive production. They have huge lulls in their offense. It's a common problem to have. The teams that don't tend to have these problems, like Alabama or Kentucky, play no defense at all. So you're trading offense for defense. Yeah, I mean, it sucks that they lost. I don't see it as this catastrophic thing in the same way that many other people do about UVA and Tony Bennett. I mean, he's in the same boat as people like John Calipari that, you know, Calipari hasn't won much in the tournament. He's won one game since 2019 as well and hasn't made it to a national championship anytime recently. So you could go down the list of people like that. I don't think that's the most interesting part of the conversation, though.
Like you said, there's not a ton to dissect in the UVA game that we haven't already dissected all year. I would just remind Virginia fans, as you entered the season with one returning starter, what did you expect? This was never going to be a national championship caliber year. So, you know, you and I talked about it on Selection Sunday, like them making the tournament, that was your win. That was like everything else was gravy. And it's the same way for NC State. We're just lucky that there's a little more gravy. And it is luck. It's a team peaking at the right time. And unfortunately, UVA peaked earlier in the season, I think, in that run of, what, 8-9 straight wins that they had to solidify their opportunity to make the tournament. That's where they peaked, and that's okay. And I also don't want to – this occurred to me, and I don't want to be too much of a hypocrite here, and, like, I'm beating my chest over the four teams of the ACC that made it. Meanwhile, I think you and I both thought Clemson was going to lose in round one.
Yeah, 100%.
So – I don't want to say
they almost blew it against Baylor.
Right.
Like
make it seem like we're sitting here like, told you so. We knew this was going to be all ACC. But I do think we were consistent in saying the ACC was better than I think other people thought they were. And I think that, yeah, when you look at Virginia specifically, like, there's a million teams that would kill to be in the position that Virginia is in. And I think the comparison to Calipari and Kentucky is apt because, just as Coach Cal has talked about it, Tony Bennett also needs to probably reevaluate how he roster builds, how he looks to attack this thing, because the game is changing. And I'm not saying like that from some the sky is falling, like college basketball is ending, whatever, but it is different. It is different. And I think that Tony has done a good job of utilizing the transfer portal to fill holes, but I think the next step for him is sort of doing things the way that Kevin Keats has been doing, not to the same extent, but being able to go out and find an impact player in the transfer portal, not just guys that fill roles, but how do you get somebody like Edwards from JMU who just entered the portal? How do you get somebody that can really change your team? That's, you know, for NC State, it's the DJ Horns of the world, the DJ Burns of the world, like those guys that really make a difference. I think that's the next thing for Tony. And I mean, maybe there's some conversations internally they can have about offensive systems and things like that. But to me, it's more about the thing that you and I have talked about all year with this UVA team, which is, where are the bucket getters? There is nobody on that roster who can just go get you points when you need it.
Right. I mean, the only thing I would say to that is some of it is a crapshoot in terms of who you go out and get. I mean, you know, DJ Burns works out great. DJ Horn works out great. Dalton Connect works out great from Northern Colorado for Tennessee. Some of the people that UVA got seemed like they would fit that mold. Dante Harris had 12 points a game, was the freshman player of the Big East tournament. Seemed like he was a bucket getter. Hasn't worked out. Andrew Rohde was on a lot of people's top 10 transfer lists. He didn't work out. So some of it is just like player evaluation. You could maybe change what you think there. And some of it might just be luck. It just didn't work out in this system. The only thing I would say is everybody who wants Tony to change the system offensively, I'm fine with that. But ultimately basketball comes down to having people that can make shots. No system you have is going to work if you don't have multiple three-point shooters on the floor, because teams are just too big and tall and athletic and can jam up the lane. And they didn't have that this year. Isaac McNeely was the only player on their team that could stretch the floor. So in terms of what Tony should do, he should go out and get shooters that are hopefully going to translate. Like, again, that was exactly the role that Andrew Roddy was supposed to occupy. He finished the year last year well over 40% in the second half of the season from beyond the arc. So, yeah, I think some of it is just team missed. Arkansas was in the same exact boat, I would point out. Like, they get a million transfers in. We're in the Sweet 16 last year. This year's team's a disaster. It wasn't even close to the NCAA tournament. So all of that is just to say, I don't love the fact as a Virginia fan that Tony gets picked on nationally from my perspective. I get it to some extent because Virginia is a low scoring team, but I also think there is this narrative that goes way beyond, like, that Virginia is the only program that can have lulls offensively that can't score.
I think it's about how consistently it happens. Like, right, that's my pushback.
But it also, like, the number of possessions that are in a Virginia game, like, makes it more likely for any team to do that in that game. In a way, that's better for Virginia. If Colorado State's running up and down the court trying to get shots with just as many, if not more, possessions, and they score 11 points and a half, nobody seems to think that you know, Nico Medved is a problem and is unwatchable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, it's about, because this is the thing that drives me crazy, is I'll get on Twitter and I see Virginia fans, like, finding a time that this happens to a team, and they're like, oh my God, where's the outrage? And it's like, it's not about the fact that it never happens. It's about the fact that it pretty consistently happens with UVA. And when it's at its worst, it's worse than I see it with other, like, yes, so they had that 11-point half, but, like, there's a reason that everybody in the country picked up on that graphic that they showed during the first four game, that was like, it's been almost an hour in real time since UVA has scored. That is rare. And I mean, like, look, State had
it's also like halftime, you know, like, it's,
no, I know,
I kind of feel like that one was stupid, but I understand why people latched onto it.
But. Sure. But I mean, like State had a game a couple years ago against Virginia Tech. They scored 24 total points in the game. Yes. People looked at that and, like, if State fans talk about it still, I also think there's some of that too, where, like, UVA fans are like, how come everybody's always making a big deal of it? It's like, some of it is about your, like, you follow people on Twitter who talk about UVA basketball. So of course they're talking about it.
Well, no, but
I mean, like
a national, I mean, like, Stephen A. Smith was talking about Virginia basketball and how they should fire Tony Bennett because he's boring.
He doesn't, but, like,
so those are the people I'm talking about.
If you're a college basketball fan who's letting what Stephen A. Smith says about college basketball get to you, I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying if someone is, this is a guy who doesn't talk about college basketball ever until we get to the tournament. Like, clearly he doesn't know what he's saying. If you're looking at that one game and saying Virginia should, or Tony Bennett should be fired, then yes, you're like, that's a stupid take. If you're looking at that game and saying that was an embarrassing display of basketball, that's accurate. It was. It was tough to watch.
No disagreement for
me. You know, and so I think, like, that's where I have an issue. Is I see people get, and this goes back to the point I made a long, long time ago about being real defensive about everything that comes with this style of basketball, which I think is really funny because there'll be that defensiveness and then, like, it can turn so fast to just, like,
Tony's got to change everything.
Yeah. And I don't get, I mean, fan's going to fan, right? Like, I have seen that very, very clearly. And to some extent, we'll say that I'm guilty of it this year of, like, I was pretty much ready for a coaching change for NC State. And now I'm like, oh, you can't change anything. Like, give him a lifetime deal. But so, I mean, fans do that, right? I don't know, man. It was a game. It was one game. And I think that, like,
it was a game. That's true. Fact check, true.
It happened. You know, I think that it's a challenge as a fan to have that perspective of, like, look, it was a win to be there. But it really was. I mean, when you look at where this team was a couple months ago and kind of really how they got through some of the stuff at the end of the season, just in terms of struggling through some of those games late, like, I don't know, man, at least you were there. And I feel that way. I'm not just saying that about Virginia. Like, it was big for NC State just to be there. And, you know, I think there's results all up and down this that are like, Nebraska's a great example. Like, it was big for them to be there. And I understand that Virginia, because you have a national title in the last 5 years, it doesn't feel like you should just be happy to be there. You want to be there all the time, but that is so rare. You know, and so I have no doubt this program will bounce back.
I want to talk about a couple other things from the opening weekend. First, let me just say that I was in the Spectrum Center where there were a lot of North Carolina fans on Saturday because North Carolina had just won. The Texas and Tennessee game was at the half, which is right when Oakland NC State was finishing up. And they put it on the Jumbotron. And this floored me because we talked about ACC and got punchy at the beginning of this episode. But I cannot imagine North Carolina fans rooting as openly as they were for NC State in the arena. Big cheers, almost louder than anything else that was going on with the Texas-Tennessee game. And at first I thought, okay, well, we're in North Carolina. There are probably a lot of NC State fans here in the arena because they just went to the game. Mm-hmm. And there were a few. I did see some in red. But as I was looking around, it was North Carolina people. I was sitting around a bunch of North Carolina people who were openly rooting for NC State. And for me, that was like very confusing. I cannot imagine just openly rooting for Virginia Tech in that situation or Maryland in that situation. So I texted you about this and was like, can you imagine the reverse? Like that you would be like, yeah, I really hope North Carolina pulls through in this. And again, as I said on Twitter, I can't really say what your response was because I want you to keep doing this podcast with me. But the gist of it was no.
Yeah. I mean,
like, what's the deal with that?
Right. Like, and this goes into what we talked about at the Open. Like, will I make money off of it? Sure. But even then, I'm not rooting for him. Now, I will say this was curious. And I don't know if it was just about like where you were, because Ryan McGee, ESPN's Ryan McGee, said that from his perception, Carolina fans were actively rooting against NC State. So
I did not get that sense in the arena. It seemed pretty loud.
So maybe
no offense to Ryan.
It's possible that he wasn't in the arena. Maybe he was at like a bar in Charlotte or something. I don't know. Because I did like his take on this, where he said UNC fans watched Heels win, then immediately started rooting for NC State to lose. But when a State fan yelled, "Go James Madison," Duke was playing on Sunday, both sides cheered. And that is what this
See,
is
that
about.
Seems right.
It's like, let's all just hate. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. There's not a situation where I would be, like, again, I had financial interest in Carolina winning, and I was still rooting for them to lose. So, like, there is nothing that would make me, in my heart of hearts, want them to win. If I was at a tournament site watching State play, and then they were showing on the screen the Carolina game afterwards, I am being vocal and obnoxious about my desire to have Carolina not only lose, but be blown out, embarrassed, like commit recruiting violations in the process. I don't know. Like whatever bad things can happen. I'm trying to censor what I said to you over text, but whatever bad things could happen, I would so much rather them happen than to pull for Carolina to win a game.
Yeah, I mean, ACC fandom, I guess for me, I maybe just have more pettiness and a grudge about these kind of things. Like, I don't root for North Carolina in the Big Ten ACC challenge, and I want the ACC to win. Even as just somebody who grew up with the ACC, there's nothing that's going to make me root for those teams. I don't understand that argument. I also don't understand the argument, we've talked about this briefly, of like, oh, we lost to this team in the tournament, so we're going to root for them the rest of the way because then it doesn't look as bad. Like, nobody thinks that way in real life. No one's like, people are going to give Colorado a pass if Marquette wins the whole thing. Like, that's just not how people live in society. Yeah, it was a weird moment, and it was especially weird because the NC State game had, you know, this darling team that went on a 5-day run, made it to the tournament by an automatic qualifier in NC State. And then they also has Oakland, who has the biggest upset. This kid comes in, Jack Gaulke, and hits 10 threes, one of five players in NCAA tournament history to do that.
Really
off
using the term
bench.
Kid lightly there.
I mean, this guy who's older than me, who was buying smokes and driving a car before I was. I mean, I thought that everybody would have been on board with Oakland. It's just like the darling team, especially given the rivalry. But taking a step back, very cool for your team to be involved in the game. That was like one of the more exciting games between personalities that people were really excited about in the tournament.
It was great. I think for the program, it's big for some of our guys. First of all, let me start with Oakland. I mean, as a mid-major program with a coach who's been there for 40 years, you know, grinding away at this thing, like, cool for them to be in that spot. As someone who attended a mid-major school that has never been to the NCAA tournament, you know, I dream about those days for Elon. So, like, I get it, and, you know, that's awesome.
And you had to ruin it.
That's right. I mean, I genuinely, like, if they weren't playing us, like, I'd be pulling for them, too. Now, having watched them play against our team, they really are some flopping-ass dudes. But it was a little tough to watch some parts of the way they play. But
well-coached, you mean?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like, you got to do what you got to do. If that includes, you know, some foul merchant-type basketball, then, like, that's totally fine. But, you know, I think it would have been a team that they were fun to pull for against Kentucky. Like, that was awesome.
Speaking of that, I keep looking at Twitter because the AD is supposed to make a decision about what they're doing with Kentucky, and I feel like this is another thing that we're going to record this on Tuesday afternoon, and then there's going to be a decision one way or the other on John Calipari. So I'm just like looking for it.
I just really don't, because he had his like coaches show the other day, and the way he was talking about it sounded like they had already kind of talked. I mean, maybe, you know, between then and now, maybe there's financial pressure to push him out, but I would be kind of surprised if he gets pushed out, to be honest with you.
A lot of money. Anyway.
Because you also got to think, like, if Kentucky were to push Calipari out, if I'm him, I'm going straight to Louisville.
Right? Like, that was my take, is go right.
100%. Rick Pitino already laid the groundwork for how to do all that.
Speaking of people who are petty, like, he has a level of pettiness that I can't even fathom. But, yeah, anyway, NC State, good stuff. Got it, the win done in overtime. Fun game. Some big shots. Some people who struggled throughout the game. Michael O'Connell really struggled and then hit some big shots down the stretch.
I mean, DJ Horn hit like the first 7 points and then didn't score again until the end of the game. That's what makes this team really special, I think, is the ability for everybody to step up. Guys are stepping up when your normal guys aren't getting it. And, you know, for every, like, away game and stuff that fans want to yell at DJ Burns about being fat and out of shape, he played 42 minutes on Saturday and had a very effective 42 minutes. So to me, this is a tough team to beat. Like, I know I'm obviously biased, but I just don't know who you stop. Like, because it seemingly in this run, and it hasn't felt this way all season, there were points in the season that felt this way, but seemingly if you know, it's kind of like a leaky boat. Like, if you plug one hole, somebody else is going to be like, I just don't know. Like, if they are continuing to fire on all cylinders, it's a tough team to beat. And I'd be remiss not to mention NC State, one of four schools in the country whose men and women are in the Sweet 16.
I'm glad you brought up the women's program, because I wanted to just have a quick moment to talk about the nonsense of the Chattanooga game where the referee, she was replaced at halftime because she had a conflict of interest because she got a master's degree from Chattanooga. And if you're just thinking like, wow, that's crazy, I can't even believe something like that happened. It happened earlier this year with the same referee in another Chattanooga game. How does this happen?
I don't know. And this, it's so funny because, like, if State loses this game, or if it's more competitive at halftime or whatever, right, our fans would have been insufferable. But maybe rightfully so. Like, I mean, it's, I don't know how this happens. I don't know how, on so many levels. One, you have to think it's the NCAA's responsibility to know these things. But two, also, if you're the ref,
don't you think you say something?
You get your assignment and you're like, huh, NC State Chattanooga. Ooh. I feel like I shouldn't be there for that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, just swap them out. Swap this lady out for somebody else.
Just like you did. Like, they brought the ref who had worked the previous game, the Tennessee game right before, and they brought her back on to give the most experienced ref, you know, instead of the standby ref, if you just switch them to begin with, give the former Chattanooga person the Tennessee game and not this one. It was weird. It was already a game that had this dynamic because, like, Wes Moore, the state coach, had coached at Chattanooga. So there's already, like, a weird dynamic going on. Then you throw this ref in and just, I don't know how the hell that happens. And I guess I don't want to, like, make an assumption, but I've never seen this happen with the men's game.
Don't you think there's, like, a box that they fill out when they apply? They're like, which teams are going to be a problem for you?
They're literally supposed to self-report any conflicts of interest. So she didn't. But I also got to think something as simple as she has a degree from there. Like, when the NCAA hired her to be an official or whatever the process would be like, then you'd think at some point they'd see her resume or, like, her LinkedIn or something. There'd be some kind of evidence.
Her LinkedIn, or she's wearing a Chattanooga shirt or something, you know.
Go Mocs. But, like, who... I also want to know how they got this information at halftime. Did, like, a fan find it and was like, hey, guess what?
I think it had to be a fan tagging somebody that got to the NCAA and they were like, oh, snap, we got to fix this.
This is crazy.
What a weird thing that happened. Anyway, that was one of the weirder things. Anything else jump out at you from the opening weekend of the tournament?
You know, it felt... I didn't feel like we had a ton of those, oh my God, it's March Madness moments.
Right.
Golkey for Kentucky felt that, or I'm sorry, for Oakland felt that way in the first round. And even when they had the ball tied against us late, I thought, oh God, we're going to get one of those big March Madness, you know, buzzer beaters and it's going to beat us. You know, obviously you have like Yale's upset of Auburn felt to me like the biggest. I mean, Auburn was top 10, the only team in the country. We talked about it on here. Only team in the country in top 10 of both offensive and defensive efficiency. There were several other upsets, obviously, but that was the only upset to me that I felt like going in, there's no way that's going to happen. Like, even like BYU losing surprised me, but I knew it was a possibility that they could lose. You had picked Grand Canyon over St. Mary's, so we knew that was a possibility. Trying to think, the Oregon over South Carolina one surprised me, but the way it happened, there was no drama. They just kind of dominated them.
Yeah. So they ended up with all 1 and 2 seeds made it in. You get 2 threes, 2 fours, 2 fives, 1 6. The only like outside double digit is NC State as an 11 seed. So it's like one of the more chalky Sweet 16s that we've had. To your point too, like Auburn was a really shocking loss. They were ranked 4th in KenPom coming into the tournament, and everybody likes to dunk on predictive analytics saying like, oh, this happened, Yale beat Auburn, so KenPom doesn't know what he's talking about. But also you have a situation where 13 of the top 14 KenPom teams are in the Sweet 16 now, so in a lot of ways the teams that we thought would do well and that predictive metrics have been tracking have actually done well in the tournament. So it's a pretty good year for KenPom.
And I don't know if that makes me feel like the crazy stuff is still coming and we're the only ones left who could, or if it just feels like, oh, here comes more chalk and we're done. I mean, I know that's not how it works. We're just going to see what happens when the ball gets rolled out on the court. But I mean, because I look ahead, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit. So actually, let me save it. But yeah, I mean, I just don't know, like, maybe the Sweet 16 and further will give us something crazy to look back at this tournament and be like, hey, this was when this happened. But I just think this tournament doesn't have its like defining moment yet. There's nothing here to me that I would look at and be like, oh, this was the tournament when X happened. I mean, well, I guess that's the wrong way to put that because for me personally, there is that. But I guess for the average fan, there has not yet been a moment where you could look at this tournament and be like, oh, 2024 is when insert big moment here.
Should we talk about the Sweet 16 games?
Let's do it.
So we're going to give our picks here against the spread. We didn't do that in the opening rounds, but we're going to do it here because we only have 8 games to choose from. So like you said, let's make some money off of it. First game on Thursday is at 7:09 on CBS. It's between Clemson and Arizona. Clemson playing really, really well, have acquitted themselves well. Brad Brownell, I think you'd have to say the Clemson people that had him on the hot seat Got to think he sticks around now after getting his team to Sweet 16. They are a 7.5-point underdog, though, against Arizona, a team that's playing super well and shook off their opening round shocking loss to Princeton last year. Who do you like?
I couldn't be more confident in Arizona to cover 7.5. Clemson has surprised me so far. I did not expect them to handle New Mexico the way that they did. I really didn't expect them to beat Baylor, but I just think Arizona is too good. You know, I mean, they had a tough game against Dayton, but give me Arizona here to win by, I think, probably by double digits.
Yeah, I think so too. And Arizona, again, one of those teams that has adjusted efficiency in the top 10 for both offense and defense. So they're a team that has the ability to win it all, really, with the amount of talent that they have. And they managed to get past Dayton. It looked a little bit dicey late in the game, but kind of just managed to get past Daron Holmes. So I will take Arizona, too, and I think that they are going to come out of this region. I think they will end up beating North Carolina. Game number two, 7:39 tip between UConn and San Diego State. UConn has just been destroying everybody. I have a hard time believing that they are not going to destroy San Diego State as well. 11 points is a lot of points for a Sweet 16 game, but maybe I tease that down to something manageable. I just can't see them losing. They're playing too well.
Yeah, I was just thinking it could be fun to tease this with the Arizona line, bring those both down a little bit. So, I mean, this game, you know, you're going to have the novelty, the storyline of this is a rematch of the national championship game from last year. That's going to wear off in about 2-3 minutes, I think. UConn just too dominant. The San Diego State team is not playing as well as they were last year.
Props to them, though, for making it back to the Sweet 16.
Absolutely. But, yeah, I like UConn here. I think they probably do cover that 11.5. But like you said, I probably would tease it down just to be safe. But UConn just, I mean, they are undoubtedly the team to beat right now. They have not been challenged. I mean, nobody expected Stetson to challenge them, but Northwestern in the second round, UConn just made look like a mid-major team. And so I think that UConn rolls into the Elite Eight.
It's been funny to watch Dan Hurley now with the success under his belt just be kind of insufferable and not seem to enjoy either of the games, even though they were blowing teams out. He was like all mouthy at halftime during the Stetson game about his own team. And it's like, okay, cool, bro. We get it. You're trying to keep your team motivated, but also maybe just enjoy the fact that you're up 30 some points on a team that has a mascot with a cowboy hat. You know, like just enjoy that. Third game of the Thursday night slate is my most interesting game, Alabama and North Carolina. North Carolina is favored by 4 points, and they looked a little bit dicey against Michigan State in the first half, righted the ship, been getting a lot of production out of Armando Bacot, has been dominating teams, but Alabama plays super fast, they don't play any defense, and that's exactly how North Carolina wants to play as well, and I really don't know, like I was off on Alabama at the beginning of the tournament, just because they don't play defense, and at some point, shots don't fall and you lose. And I feel like North Carolina has the counter to that to feed it inside to Bacot. I don't know if Alabama has that answer. So 4 points, I guess I'll take North Carolina there. I would not bet this game. But maybe Alabama just has a little bit more offensively and can stay with it. I don't know.
I might live bet this game. But
wait till somebody races out to lead and then bet the other
team.
That's
right. That's right. Yeah, I just don't think that, like, the likes of Grant Nelson inside are really ready to deal with Armando Bacot. I like Carolina in this game. Like you said, though, I'm probably not betting it. I do kind of like, because I know that you bristle at this a little bit, but this Carolina team is a lot better defensively than they have been. They're not, I don't think they're necessarily as good as the numbers suggest. That point total is at 173.5. Like that is a high point total. And I know Alabama games tend to be up there, but I kind of like Carolina to actually slow this one down a little bit. And so I might kind of like the under. I see this
a big number.
I see this as being sort of a sneaky low, not low scoring, but definitely lower than that. Because you look at Carolina and like, you know, they've had some high scoring games this year, but recently they haven't been as high. And, you know, Alabama for sure has had several games over in the hundreds, and I think is definitely trying to play that level of basketball, that style of basketball. But I don't know. I kind of like the under as a sneaky bet here if I was going to place one, but I think I'll just probably sit back and enjoy this game.
Last game of the day, Illinois at Iowa State, or Illinois against Iowa State in Boston. It's a 10:09 tip. These late night tips on Thursday. Come on, folks. Like, I don't care about the people on the West Coast. I got to go to sleep. Iowa State favored by 1.5, but I love Illinois in this game. I think that they are playing some of the best basketball of the tournament, and you know, they have the ability to shoot the ball. Domisk has been shooting lights out. Terrence Shannon, for all of his off-court troubles, we'll say, to be very charitable, has been playing probably better than anybody in the entire tournament in terms of scoring. And then they've got Dane Danger, one of the best names of the entire tournament. He's been playing super well as well. I just think Illinois is going to win. It would help the NCAA a lot if they lost so that they don't have to deal with questions about this and Terrence Shannon. But I can't pick against them right now based on how well they're playing.
It is tough to, I mean, I just feel like you can't not talk about the fact that the most famous player in this game has pending charges, pretty serious violent crime charges. So that's something that I think has to be paid attention to as you're kind of looking at this game. But on the court, Iowa State, best defense in the country. Illinois, best offense in the country. Hard to ask for much more than that. I'm going to go with the defense here. I like Iowa State to be able to slow Illinois down and frustrate them. And I like Iowa State to win, but this truly is a pick 'em. I mean, like, I don't love betting on these late games here because they both just seem so tough to pick. But I do like Iowa State here, -1.5. I think it will be a very close game, probably a last possession game. I mean, I think it comes down to a shot at the end that either wins it for Iowa State or in my prediction, Illinois misses that would win it. So I have Iowa State covering that 1.5.
We move to Friday, where your NC State Wolfpack take on Marquette, who managed to survive and advance in their last game. Two teams that were challenged in the last game of the tournament, making it here. 6.5-point favorite for Marquette. And I will just say, like, the analytics like Marquette more than I do. Like, they can hit a lot of threes. Tyler Kulik is obviously a great shooter and a very confident one. But they've had some losses this year where I just look at them and I'm like, I don't know. I just, like, they're so reliant on that, and they're so reliant on shooting three-pointers that I just can never fully get on board with them. And I just like the way NC State's playing. So I'm going to take the points. Maybe Marquette wins a close game, but if you're giving me 6.5, 7 points, I'm going to take NC State for the reasons you talked about earlier. There's just not one person that they're so reliant on. They could go inside. They can shoot outside. I think they're on a roll right now.
Yeah, I likely am taking the points here as well. Trying really, really hard not to be a homer. I don't know, man. I like the matchups. I really do. I like, you know, you probably put Casey Morcell on Cam Jones, Marquette's leading scorer. Casey quietly has been playing some of the best defense of his career, and he's always been known as being a good defender. But if you look at his work against RJ Davis in the ACC championship game, if you look at his work against the guard from Texas Tech, whose name is escaping me right now, his work against Golkey late in that Oakland game where
he did
just
get juked out of his shoes on that one. That was a pretty cool move.
But yeah. 90% of the game, he was in his jersey and made it tough for him to get open. So I like Casey against Cam Jones, and then you can kind of use Jaden Taylor, Michael O'Connell against Tyler Kolek. The difference maker here is, can Oso Iguodara, the big for Marquette, handle DJ Burns down low? And I mean, the easy answer, I think, for anybody is no. Like, it's just a matter of, does DJ Burns stay out of foul trouble? They just went up against Colorado, where they had to deal with Eddie Lampkin, who is also a massive human being. You know, so I think that Marquette, it's going to be tough. Like, I definitely don't think that this is easy for NC State, but I'll take the 6.5 points. It's gone down a little bit. When I first saw it posted, I think I actually saw it at 8 and then at 7.5, and now it's at 6.5. So
America's darlings. Everyone's betting on them.
That's right. So, I mean, yeah, you gotta, it doesn't get easier here in terms of not losing shooters. You know, Cam Jones, a 41% 3-point shooter, Tyler Kolek's at 39.7%. So State's going to have to continue to be locked in on defense, but that's been the difference maker for them over this last couple of weeks. So hopefully that continues, and, you know, maybe you get a magical win, but I definitely like them to cover and make this thing come down to the wire.
Next game at 7:39 on Friday, Gonzaga and Purdue. Two teams that are playing awesome basketball in the tournament. Purdue, Zach Edey, just torching everybody. They had their walk-ons in with like 5 minutes left to go in their second round game. Zach Edey seems unstoppable, and also is aided by the fact that just he seems to be able to get away with shoving people full. Like, everybody that's complaining about DJ Burns and what he does, go watch Zach Edey. It's like way, way worse. Anyway, playing against Gonzaga, 5.5-point spread. I really want to pick Gonzaga outright. I really want to, but I don't think I can. I think Purdue is just playing too well right now. And playing the game in Detroit, I think they're going to have a huge home crowd advantage. So I'm going to pick Purdue, but I don't love it.
I find this game to be about as challenging as the Carolina-Alabama game to pick. So these two teams played, you know, back in Maui, where Purdue won by 10. That was all the way back November 20th, right? So, like, hard to use that as data to help you figure out this game. I love this Gonzaga team, which is why I was really high on St. Mary's, and obviously that came back to bite me. But I was high on St. Mary's because they had beaten Gonzaga 2 out of 3 times. Mm-hmm. And I really like this Gonzaga team. I like Graham Ike inside. I think his matchup with Edey could be really interesting. I mean, obviously he's not 7-4, so like you can't expect him to fully be able to neutralize Zach Edey, but he's a big dude and he moves well, has a lot of athleticism, and then offensively, you know, he can pull Zach Edey outside a little bit and make him defend, which I think is going to be interesting. Ryan Nimhard at point guard has just been unreal for Gonzaga recently. So I am going to go Gonzaga straight up. I think Gonzaga wins this game. I can't shake the feeling of not trusting Purdue in the tournament.
Right.
So I think I'm just going to go for it. We're going to roll with Gonzaga here. Yeah. I mean, the slipper still fits. Can we still say that about them?
I don't
25
know.
Years later.
9 straight Sweet 16s. That's pretty impressive. I did see somebody asked on Twitter, one of the UVA fans I saw on Twitter was like, would you rather have a national championship and all the heartbreak surrounding it, first round losses, UMBC, or have 9 straight Sweet 16s? And I don't know how that's a choice. I don't know how that's a real choice. Give me the trophy and the pain. I'll take that.
Well,
every
if it's
time.
9 straight Sweet 16s with
no
like,
titles,
the real chance that, like, if it's like, you know, it's 9 straight and probably continuing to make it, but you're never going to get that title, or like you could have it. Like, I don't know.
Third game on the Friday slate, Duke and Houston. Duke played exceptionally well against JMU in a game that I thought was just gearing up to be a real trap for them. That was maybe their best, most complete basketball game of the season. And they're the team that at the very beginning of the year, they were one of the two teams that I placed a preseason bet on to win it all. Finally playing like that in one game. And then you got Houston, who played great, but then almost choked away an inexplicable loss against Texas A&M. Like, the fact that they held on to that game, they made some really dumb decisions in the final minute. Then got a whole bunch of people fouled out of the game, but survived, scoring 100 points, which is not normally what you see from Kelvin Sampson's teams, like one of the two best defenses in the country. I have a hard time picking against Houston just because of that defense, and I feel like they have enough offensive power. LJ Cryer, Jamal Shedd, I think they just have the talent to match up with Duke and are really physical. But man, that Duke game was so, they played so well against JMU that I'm just like a little bit antsy about this one as well.
Well, first of all, I just learned something, which is that you placed a bet on Duke to win the national championship, which means you want them to win the national championship.
I don't dislike Duke, though. I don't dislike Duke.
So you want Duke to win the national title?
At this point, sure. My team's not available.
You don't. This feels a little bit revisionist to say you don't dislike Duke. You don't dislike Duke at all.
No, not really.
Okay.
I really don't. Sorry.
That's fine. I will slide into my seat as the only likable host on this podcast now. or just neither of us are likable.
Part of our appeal.
I get the appeal of Duke here as a pick because they have been dominant. But I would remind you they've been dominant against Vermont and JMU. And like, yes, JMU, I liked their odds as a mid-major school and they looked good and had the nation's longest winning streak coming into the tournament and all that good stuff. And I picked them to beat Wisconsin. I liked them to get some upsets. And Jared McCain is not going to shoot 8-for-11 from three again. Like I mean, if he does, that feels like an unpredictable thing, right? There's a lot of variance in the way that Duke plays. They require either pretty much McCain or Tyrese Proctor to get really hot from three. And against JMU, they both are pretty hot. I mean, Jared McCain was nuclear with an 8-of-11 performance. Tyrese Proctor, 4-of-10 from three, is a really good shooting night. You know, it's going to be hard to replicate that against Houston. Duke has struggled this year with teams that are very physically tough and kind of play a bruising style of basketball, which, as you said, is what Houston wants to do. They got taken out of that a little bit against A&M, but I think Houston dictates the style of play in this game. And is able to sort of bully Duke out of the tournament here. I think Filipowski is going to struggle. I think the guards are going to struggle with the physicality. Yeah, give me Houston here to cover.
Last game of the Sweet 16 is between Creighton and Tennessee. Having seen Tennessee play live, they are also very physical on defense and something that Rick Barnes has always prided himself on. They've got scorers, but they were 1-for-21 at one point from three-point range against Texas. That game never should have been close. Just the talent level between those two teams. Tennessee was way better, and it's still in the last minute of the game. They're having to foul and try to pull out a victory because they just had a really cold shooting night. They are three-point favorites against Creighton, and you know what? I'm just taking Creighton straight up. Even though I think that they are not necessarily the more talented team, I think that they have the depth of three-point shooting. It's basically just going to be, can Creighton make threes or not? Because that's what every Creighton game comes down to. And if they do, I think that neutralizes some of what Tennessee wants to do defensively. I'm going to take Creighton, Kalkbrenner, hope that they upset Tennessee.
This is tough because, like you said, Tennessee just had not its best performance. But I think it's important then that they still won that game. And I think that I look at this Tennessee. First of all, I think that this is probably the second best game of the Sweet 16. I think the Iowa State Illinois game is going to be the best game. Both of these teams are, in my mind, top 10 teams in the country. You know, KenPom, I think, has them both in the top 10 or top 11 at least. Tennessee has been great defensively over the last few years, but with Dalton Connect, they kind of have more scoring punch. You know, and Creighton is sort of the opposite of it, where they've been really good offensively, but now, especially with Kalkbrenner as kind of the rim protector to anchor the defense, they've had a really good defense as well. If the perimeter scorers for Tennessee can get going, you know, obviously just having a rough game, I like Tennessee here. You know, I really like Zakai Ziegler. I like Vescovi. It feels like he's been there for 50 years. I actually saw, I think it was The Athletic was talking about this. These two teams have played one time before, and it was in 1937. And they said it feels like Santiago Vescovi was there for that game too. Yeah, I like Tennessee to cover this. I think this game projects out as a really good game, but I think if Tennessee can make some shots, it actually might get out of hand. Just because I think they have more depth, they have a little bit more high level talent. Yeah, but Creighton, I don't know. Creighton will get you. Like they beat NC State last year, and it just kind of sometimes they look like a team that you can talk yourself out of. You're like, oh, they're not that good, and then suddenly they start nailing shots. And there was their game against Oregon, the one possession where they had run some like action. You know, they run a lot of complicated stuff, and they had run something, couldn't get what they wanted. And then all of a sudden, Kalkbrenner was just left open from three. And he kind of looks around and is like, oh, yeah, well, I guess I'll just take this and just drains a three. And it's like, yeah, this team is loaded with weapons. But, yeah, I like Tennessee to be able to shut them down and score enough to win.
You know how you were talking about Purdue in the tournament? That's how I am with Rick Barnes.
That's fair.
I can't. And this is maybe his best team ever, but I just can't get over, like, this is usually when he goes out.
That's totally fair.
So, I don't know. Yeah. All right, those are our picks. Big weekend ahead. Excited to watch NC State. Hope that they pull it out. I'll be rooting for you because, you know, your happiness is the most important thing. But
that's right.
If it will make you feel better, I can place a bet on the other team and then still root for NC State.
See how things start shaking out as the game goes on. A lot of my, like, pre-game picks have not been great in terms of what I'm betting on. I have been on a bit of a live bet heater. So I'm going to just continue. I'm not going to bet on any of these games before they start. I'm only live betting this weekend.
Okay. Make sure that you don't live bet a bigger number than what you start with. That's the rule.
Yeah. Well,
it's value. You can send your picks to us in social media at PWO Pod. We will probably be live tweeting. If we're watching the game together on Friday, I can just send reaction shots of you white knuckling your way through the game.
I'll be at work.
Yeah, you're still not going to be white knuckling.
Yeah. Well.
You're going to be like really providing bad service, like distractedly. Being like, here are the three stouts you ordered. No, wait.
I warned my boss that on Friday before working Saturday. I was like, I just want you to know this game is going to be happening while we're here at work. I'm not going to be very useful if it comes down to the wire. And she was like, oh, that's fine. I'll help customers. And I didn't say anything. But I really meant as realizing that game would be ending as we were closing, and there's like closing tasks.
Yeah, can I close out? No, can NC State close out this game?
That's exactly what it was. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to be watching this, and we'll figure it out later. But you know, I got to watch it at work, and I was very gracious, did not kill anybody. There were three guests who stayed to watch the end of the game who were definitely cheering for Oakland. And I was very polite.
Good for you, buddy.
That's right. And then when the game ended, I said, now get the hell out of here.